This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. A member of the Federal Communications Commission heard yesterday from Ohio Valley residents upset about poor internet service in rural communities. The Appalachian Connectivity Summit in Marietta, Ohio, explored possible solutions. But as Benny Becker reports, the event came during a week that also saw large internet providers suing to stop one way to connect more people.
Across the Ohio Valley, more than 2 million people don't have any options for fast and reliable internet. That creates a lot of challenges for people like Heron Linscott, a sophomore at Federal Hocking High School in southeast Ohio. At home, she says she can sometimes get internet on her phone if she stands in the exact right spot, and even then, only for about 20 seconds at a time. Linscott says that makes it hard for her to keep up with school.
My teachers, they'll say, oh, well, that worksheet's online. Oh, that video's on Google Classroom. I can't get to it. There's no way. So it's tricky.
Linscott was among those who got to share their story with FCC Commissioner Mignon Clyburn at this town hall meeting in Marietta, Ohio.
I am especially moved and troubled by what I've heard today. We have some fundamental problems that we have yet to address.
West Virginia State Delegate Roger Hanshaw is also extremely concerned about the lack of reliable internet service he's seen around his home in Clay County, West Virginia.
There's just simply no excuse for service being so poor that we can't process a credit card sale.
Hanshaw sponsored a bill, now a law, encouraging locally owned cooperatives to expand broadband service. But one section of the new law is being challenged by some of the state's biggest internet providers, including Frontier Communications. Frontier's Elena Kilpatrick says her company is suing the state over a provision that would allow others access to utility poles.
Those requirements are inconsistent with pre-existing requirements established by the FCC. We're simply seeking a ruling that the federal requirements prevail.
For more than a decade, Christopher Mitchell has been working on broadband expansion issues with the Minnesota-based Institute for Local Self-Reliance. Mitchell gave the Connectivity Summit's keynote address, and Frontier got a mention in his talk.
I'm not saying that Frontier is a bad company. I want to say that in our economic system, they have a responsibility to get a good return on their investments for their shareholders. And if we're trying to solve connectivity for rural America, trying to get them to do it is the wrong approach.
Mitchell argued that too much federal money goes to large companies building substandard networks. He hopes that in the future, more money will go toward local governments and cooperatives who have more incentive to build long-term solutions like fiber optic networks that could meet their community's needs for decades to come. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Benny Becker in Whitesburg, Kentucky.
The Ohio Valley Resource is made possible with support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Tens of thousands of Boy Scouts are making their way to southern West Virginia today for the start of their national jamboree. But as Ashton Mara reports, preparations began long before a single scout sets foot on site.
Planning for the 2017 Boy Scouts of America National Jamboree began almost 4 years ago, immediately following the first jamboree held at the Summit Bechtel National Reserve. The reserve is situated on 14,000 acres in Fayette County between Oak Hill and Fayetteville, next to the New River Gorge National River. Tuesday, hundreds of volunteers were already in place, constructing the main stage at the amphitheater, setting up supply tents, and learning their roles for the 10-day event. Those volunteers include military men and women from almost every branch and members of the West Virginia National Guard. Sergeant Zoe Morris says 600 Guard members are using the event as a replacement for their annual training days, working with the Department of Defense and state and local officials on the National Jamboree Joint Task Force.
It builds us and our experience so that if, you know, anything ever happened like the flood or the water crisis or anything happened in the future, we already have really good working relationships with all those different interagencies.
While on site, the estimated 30,000 Boy Scouts will participate in a variety of activities, including hiking, zip lining, and whitewater rafting. They'll set up their own tents, cook their own meals, and learn some valuable lessons, says Glenn Ault, who leads the National Administrative Group as a volunteer.
I come from Los Angeles, but for even some of the kids that are going to come out of South LA that maybe have never been, you know, to a camp before, they're never spent really 10 days in a tent. I mean, they are life-changing experiences.
When asked just how these thousands of scouts will change, there were some jokes.
They'll smell
Jamboree director Mike Myers says he can't promise parents at home that their scouts will shower, although there are facilities on site. But he says they'll spend their time doing more than just mountain biking and fishing. The scouts will volunteer some 100,000 hours of community service in 9 West Virginia counties during their time in the state.
And this is part of who we are, and in our DNA, so to speak, is to do a good turn daily and help other people.
The governor's office estimates those volunteer projects will generate some $7 million of economic impact for the state. The Summit Bechtel Reserve itself hasn't been without controversy, though. Reuters reported that the initially budgeted $176 million project quickly blossomed to $439 million in 2015, causing some financial strain on the national nonprofit. The year before, West Virginia voters approved a constitutional amendment allowing the scouts to maintain their nonprofit tax-exempt status while renting out the facility. A representative of the site says so far, the Girl Scouts have also used the reserve for their own camps. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Ashton Mara at the Summit Bechtel National Reserve.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:50. Areas of fog this morning becoming mostly sunny with a chance of isolated rain and thunderstorms. Highs in the 80s and 90s. Mostly clear tonight with lows in the 60s. Support for this program is provided by the staff and friends of West Virginia Public Broadcasting. In memory of our long-serving board member Susan Landis, her tireless work on behalf of the arts, humanities, and philanthropy benefited so many. Susan's mentorship and service will be missed, but leaves a lasting legacy. Recently, on our ongoing series, The Struggle to Stay, we met 20-year-old Kira Solee Daw, a young theater director and playwright from Shepherdstown, who at age 17 started a small theater group called Whiskey Shine and Pantomime Productions. The company has grown since beginnings in 2014, and now WSP is putting on its third and biggest production, William Shakespeare's Hamlet. Kira hopes this show will help establish WSP as a credible theater group, one that's recognized and taken seriously. Achieving this dream is part of Kira's struggle to stay. As a reminder to our listeners, Kira identifies as gender fluid and prefers they, them, and their pronouns. Reporter Liz McCormick takes us back to the story where Hamlet is just about to open to the public.
When you get a chance, you want to take a little last look, see if the set is...
Can you give me 5 minutes?
It's late October 2016, nearly Halloween, and it's finally time. It's opening night for WSP's production of Hamlet.
That's so great. Thank you guys so much for coming. We're going to wait another 10 minutes, and then we're going to start, all right?
While the cast was getting situated backstage, Kira was walking around the performance space, making sure everything was ready to go, and chatting with guests.
Okay, I'm a little non-feeling right now because I'm kind of in shock that this is happening. This is happening right now. It's happening right now. We're opening in, like, it's 7:22. We open in 38 minutes.
Since Kira's first show in 2014, WSP has been performing here, in this space. The Timber Frame Folly, located in the woods on the outskirts of Shepherdstown. The Folly is a wooden structure built a little over 20 years ago. It's used as a performance space for the community, and it's situated in a grassy clearing, surrounded by trees.
Yeah, no, this space is definitely home.
Okay. Seating is either in the grass or on benches cut from logs. The space is rustic and charming. A large crowd has turned up, everyone settles in, and Hamlet begins.
Look, where sadly the poor wretch comes reading.
Away, away, I do beseech you, both away! I'll board him presently. Upon mine honor, how does my good lord Hamlet?
Excellent well.
If thou didst ever hold me in thy heart, absent thee from felicity a while, and in this harsh world draw thy breath in pain to tell my story, the rest is silence.
The cast gets a standing ovation. The audience laughed at the Shakespearean jokes, there was silence during the dramatic moments, and the cast just had a lot of energy. There were about 50 people who came out to see the opening show, which Kira says is an accomplishment considering their very first opening night back in 2014 only had 8 people in the audience.
Everything is just better than when we first started. The sets and the crews and the actors and the acting and the text and the lighting and just the... We have merchandise? Like, what is this world that we live in? I mean, it was just like, this is an idea that developed in my parents' basement and now we're, like, here.
The entire run of Hamlet, all 4 shows, made about $5,000, so Kira was even able to pay their actors and crew. Several members of Kira's family also came out for the show, including Kira's mom, Kathleen Daw. At the time, Kira was just beginning to ask friends and family to use they, them, and their pronouns, so Kira's mom still uses she and her in this interview.
I'm so proud of Kira. She's always been a go-getter. She's been a doer since minute one. I remember coming in when she was 4 years old, pretending to be 8, and being on homework hotline. And she was writing and winning writing contests in first grade, and she has always excelled. There are a lot of reasons why one can't succeed. But when I look into that little fireball's eyes, do I want to think that she can't succeed? No, I really think she might. I think she might.
While Kira's mom does support her daughter, it's been tough to understand Kira's struggles with gender identity. It's been hard for all of Kira's close family.
The fact that they're trying to make an effort means a lot. Because it is an accommodation. They are trying to accommodate me. However, I would say that I would really hope that people and families and anybody who is associated with transgender or gender fluid or non-binary or androgynous people, make those accommodations because it's a sign that you care. You know, do you care about grammar more or do you care about that person more? Do you care about, you know, your perceptions of girl and boy more or do you care about your kid more? And I think that those are the lessons that my family is learning right now. That I'm learning right now as well. But I love them dearly. They love me back. We're working out the kinks in between.
Being gender fluid, Kira says there are some places in West Virginia where they don't feel safe. But that's not the case everywhere.
I feel very safe in the Panhandle. Even Martinsburg, Fayetteville especially, and also, you know, Jefferson County. Very, very accepting. We're also very close to D.C. and Maryland is doing pretty good on that, on those efforts to make those people feel comfortable.
Despite those safety concerns, Kira still supports the state.
Oh, I'll always fight for West Virginia. That's why I got it tattooed on my body. But, because I care. And this is home.
Tomorrow, we'll hear the rest of this story as Kira shares some big news about their parents, how this will impact Kira's struggle to stay, tomorrow at 7:41 on West Virginia Morning. To listen to previous Struggle to Stay stories, visit our website, wvpublic.org. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, Marshall University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Ashton Mara. I'm Teresa Wills.
Hi, I'm Glynis Board, a reporter up in the Northern Panhandle, Hey, listen to this.
Hello, my name is Stephen Wilson, and I am the first male cheerleader at Wheeling Middle School.
I'm Caroline Spencer. On my team, there's no discrimination. He fits right in as one of the best tumblers out of all 13 of us.
I mean, I have friends that encourage me and stick up for me. What more could I ask for?
You can hear stories like these from, by, about, and for West Virginians, only on West Virginia Morning, every weekday morning starting at 7:41.